The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974 and underwriting our podcasts for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the November 2022 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. And we're going to read an article this month entitled, Here Comes the Big Parade to Start. For the past 75 years, North Carolina's largest Thanksgiving parade has rolled through Charlotte streets nearly every holiday season. A jubilant reminder that Christmas is just around the corner. Written by David Aaron Moore. We have a whole bunch of festivity-loving people here. They are all women dressed in, I don't know whether it's orange or red. Let's call it reddish-orange shirts, short-sleeve shirts, which says, Find Your Service Opportunity on the back. And underneath that is a long-sleeved blue shirt. I notice they have gloves on, so it must be cold there in Charlotte. And what they're doing is they're holding the strings to hold down an inflated, gigantic pumpkin. And this was taken at night. Over leaf, there's another picture from the parade. This one says, Charlotte's Thanksgiving parade has become more culturally diverse in recent years, with staples like a big inflatable turkey, followed by performances from dance groups like the Pacific Arts Troupe, which is shown in a small picture below, waving their very colorful dresses. Yeah, they are dresses, the lower part of the dresses, on a very, probably very cold winter street in Charlotte. And up above, a lady has got her hands up in the air. She's just really celebrating beside this gigantic turkey on top of a float. Let's get to the words. I arrived at the warehouse that November morning to help set up artificial Christmas trees and spray fake snow onto plywood cutouts. It was the early 80s, and I was a student at Charlotte's Harding High School, working part-time in visual merchandising at Belk Department Store downtown. Normally, I would have been dressing mannequins in power suits or arranging leg warmers on display shelves. But the holidays were approaching, and my boss had asked me to help with the creation of the store's magnificent float that would roll through the center of the city during the annual Thanksgiving Day Carousel Parade. We attached the Belk logo to either side of a mammoth multi-stage or multi-level stage on wheels, then secured a wintry backdrop scene to a riser on which the Carolina's Carousel Queen would stand and wave regally to the roadside crowds. When it was finished, the float shimmered with holiday spirit, oversized gift boxes, and shiny wrapping paper, a three-member animatronic deer family, and an onboard audio loop of the Jerry Herman classic, We Need a Little Christmas. A few days later, I watched with pride as the float that I helped create glided down Tryon Street, a symbolic welcome to the holiday shopping season. Enthusiastic employees dressed as happy shoppers danced around, encouraging onlookers to visit Belk for their every Christmas purchasing need. And then just as quickly as my float had arrived, it continued on down the street, followed by Clydesdale horses, school marching bands, local TV, and radio celebrities in vintage convertibles, clowns, beauty queens, and shriners in fez hats looping around on mini bikes. Oh, and Santa, of course. any Thanksgiving parade worth its salt. It was an overindul of fat man ho-ho-hos atop a North Pole-themed float, complete with sleigh, reindeer, and elves. Since 19, I think this might be a caption for the picture here. It appears kind of in the middle of the article. It's hard to tell, but I'll read it anyway. Since 1947, Charlotte's annual Thanksgiving parade has brought together people from across the Carolinas for a shared experience of joy and happiness. It has thrilled children and adults alike with high-stepping, musically unchallenged marching bands, extravagant costumes and floats, and a who's who of local, regional, and national celebrities. Over its 75 years, the parade has seen surprise attractions ranging from an elephant named Vicky and a 19th century horse-drawn fire truck to the obscure French vaudeville performer Denise Darcel and local TV cowboy Fred Kirby astride his horse Calico. Catherine Owens, whose family moved to Charlotte in the early 1960s, fondly remembers venturing downtown with her parents every Thanksgiving Day from the time she was about 6 years old. "Charlotte seemed like such a big city to me," says Owens, now 65. "We'd get dressed up in our Sunday best. Sometimes I'd wear a hat and gloves and even an overcoat." Owens' family was just one of thousands that have poured into downtown Charlotte every Thanksgiving since four local businessmen, Earl Crawford, P.H. Battle, W.S. Lupo, and Charles Dudley, came up with a plan that would help prime the holiday shopping pump. The means to that end? A parade full of enough splash and exotica to attract Christmas shoppers to the busy retail corridor earlier in the season. It wasn't an entirely new concept. The idea of using parade and pageantry as an economic booster began in 1920 when Gimble Brothers Department Store in Philadelphia staged what's thought to be the first Thanksgiving procession with 50 people, 15 cars, and a fireman dressed as Santa Claus. 4 years later, the annual Thanksgiving ritual was etched into America's popular consciousness when Macy's began its famous parade in New York City. By the time Charlotte jumped aboard the trend in the late 1940s, the city's downtown streets were filled with restaurants and storefronts that turned a trip to town into a family event. For those watching their budgets, stores like Grant's, Woolworth, and Kress offered less pricey opportunities, while Tanner's Hot Dog Stand and Green's Luncheonette kept the kids fed without leaving pockets empty. More upscale shoppers could go to Ivy's or Bell and enjoy a fine meal in those stores' top-floor restaurants. Charlotte Parade continued to grow over the next 3 years, and by 1950 it adopted the name Carolina's Carousel, which included not just the parade but also other related activities. More change was to come. In 1968, the event was scheduled for the morning instead of the afternoon so that CBS could broadcast the parade on national TV. By the mid-aughts, the city had almost doubled its number of floats to 23, and in 2012, U.S. News and Report ranked it among the best Thanksgiving parades in the country. The following year, however, the Carolinas Carousel Foundation announced that longtime sponsor Belk, which no longer maintained a downtown store, had pulled out of the Charlotte Parade. With no sponsor, there was a possibility that the event would be canceled. For Charlotteans, this came as a shock. The idea of losing the annual Thanksgiving Day parade was unthinkable. It's a shared social experience of human connection. And with each passing year, it seemed to just get better and better, Owen says. How could we possibly let something like that slip through our fingers? Fortunately, the beloved parade escaped an untimely demise. Charlotte Center City Partners took over the production in 2013, and now Novant Health is its lead sponsor. "People keep stepping up to the plate to keep the parade going," says Maura Quinn, CCCP's chief operating officer. "It's become such a community treasure. It's an important part of our history and culture." People had already begun to line up along the edges of Tryon Street around 5:30 p.m. last year when I arrived at my first Thanksgiving parade in Charlotte in more than 15 years. Some of them set up outdoor seating, and an elderly couple directly across the street from me brought blankets to keep them warm. By the time the floats began gliding by, I noticed that things had changed from years past. Gone were the sleek and sophisticated 60s Lincolns and sporty early model Thunderbird ragtops, toting television and radio personalities. They were replaced by removable top Jeeps and brand new BMW convertibles filled with local and regional politicians. And for the first time in its history, the parade began just after dusk instead of in the morning. The darkness allowed Charlotte's downtown lights to blend with the rolling holiday decorations in a way that would have been impossible during daylight hours. Other things remained reassuringly the same, like high school bands. There were bands that traveled long distances to perform, arriving by buses from counties like Orange and Burke. And there were local bands, like the one from West Charlotte High School, whose acclaim for its drum and rhythm corps style dates back to the 70s. Those are the special moments that people from across North Carolina have traveled to Charlotte to see for the past three quarters of a century. The street decorations have changed, and so have the floats, someone says, but the music and drum beats from the bands and the excited crowds still take me back to those old parades that I went to years ago. She's referring to those times long ago when her family would bring along relatives visiting for the holidays, when her father groused about being too early for stores to be decorating for Christmas. But young Owens paid him no mind. She was mesmerized. There were street vendors selling cotton candy, spinners, and balloons on sticks and strings. One guy even had a little monkey, she says. And when the day was done, we would go back to the house for Thanksgiving dinner. If you dig around on YouTube, you can find footage of Charlotte's Thanksgiving Day parades dating as far back as the 50s. And it's fascinating to see so many people unknowingly captured during such celebratory moments in the city's past. There's a constant incidental theme that runs throughout all of the parades, both past and present. That theme is happiness. I witnessed it during the parades of my childhood in the 70s. Later, as I worked on that Belk float during my teen years in the 80s and then again last year, as big balloon floats hovered above the crowd. Happiness is what Thanksgiving parades are all about, and Charlotte's parade may be the happiest of them all. Whether you're watching beauty queens in the 60s with their beehive hairdos, attendees wearing afros or feathered shag cuts in the 70s, or scenes from the parade last year, you'll see happiness in the faces of both participants and the observers. Happiness over a shared experience that crosses cultures and ages and brings us together to celebrate our thanks for being alive, being part of the human experience, and being excited about what the future holds. And really, what more could we ask for in a Thanksgiving parade? And now, our state presents North Carolina 101, the ultimate guide to North Carolina, introducing a new 200-page publication celebrating the icons and institutions that make our state great. You can pre-order your copy now. Visit ourstate.com/NC101MAG, North Carolina 101's MAG. Or you can call 800-948-1409. Moving right along now, all creatures great and small, the state animals of North Carolina. Now, this begins a whole section. We're just going to be able to get started on this, and we'll read some more next week. The loyal plothound and the industrious honeybee, the spirited Spanish mustang, and the patient box turtle. These creatures are so integral to our landscapes that we made them symbols of our state. Bright and beautiful, wise and wonderful, wearing feathers, fur, or scales, they embody our North Carolina pride. The first one of these says, "Into the woods." In a nature preserve in the heart of the Sandhills, many of North Carolina's official state animals live in abundant harmony among the pines. Actually finding them, however, is another story. Written by Eleanor Spice Rice. Picture here says, beneath the pines of the Weymouth Woods Sandhills Nature Preserve, several species of our state animals live so contentedly that many don't even bother coming out to say hello. There are five pictures on the page here. One says the state marsupial is the opossum. You don't see many of them. State mammal is the gray squirrel. You see a lot of them. The state salamander is the marbled salamander. Good luck with that one. The state frog is the Pine Barrens tree frog. And the state tree is, not surprisingly, the pine. I've come to Weymouth Woods to see as many of our state symbols as possible in one setting. Although the whole of North Carolina is its own bounty, teeming with tremendous plant and animal diversity, the Weymouth Woods Sandhills Nature Preserve is purported to be something of a fairyland. Sweeping across the sloping sandhills near Southern Pines, it is home to a menagerie of official state flora and fauna. Here resides the possum, our nearsighted marsupial that can fight like a tiger and resist rabies, but would prefer it if we just left it alone to rummage through our garbage cans in peace. The eastern box turtle, a dome of charm, toddling through the understory. The Pine Barrens tree frog, what a looker! Those pinstripes, those bellows that puff and vanish like fragile balloons. The regal cardinal. Imagine seeing one for the first time. The crest, the impossible cadmium red. The gentle dogwood reaching upward in the forest shade. The marbled salamander. It can breathe through its skin. The eastern gray squirrel. Its chatter and bushy bursts of joy. And, of course, pine trees. Not just the longleaf pine, though we are the land of the longleaf pine. As far as North Carolina symbols go, any pine tree will do. I'm ready to find them all, and I've brought along Thump, my five-year-old son, to help. Our sandhills formed when ancient seas that once covered the state receded. They left behind their beaches with contours of dunes as the ice caps melted and froze. Sand like this makes for an inhospitable home to many plants, but not pines with their deep roots reaching for water beyond where others can touch. Longleaf pines once covered a swath of millions of acres this way. When the Highlanders came from Scotland with other settlers, they saw those open forest floors, the flecks of light shifting from the shining needles waving above. Where are the oaks, the carpets of moss and leaves? They deemed the land pine barrens, barren of the signs of the world they understood. But the place was anything but a wasteland. I'm not sure they knew that then. Those settlers sliced the trees for pitch and turpentine for ships. When the railroad companies started laying down tracks, the trees were felled or bruised to become timber and treatment. The pine savannas were slivered away at first and then fragmented and then became the small, quiet islands of today, surrounded by golf courses and homes. Weymouth Woods is one of those islands. We're going to a fairyland, I tell Thump. I've never been, and I've imagined, as the Highlanders must have, a forest like the familiar lush tangles of green in our North Carolina home. But it isn't working out like we planned. The Pine Barrens are no fairyland. That's the first thing we learn as we approach. Thick canopies of needles cool the understory. Everything is soft here, open, hushed like snowfall. The sand is draped in tresses of softer, rufous-colored needles. Footfalls are shushed by the breeze and sand and blend with the rest of nature. The Pine Barrens are something older than fairies, quieter but still magical. At the visitor center, we meet knowledgeable staff and find a discovery center for children. We want to see as many animals as possible, we tell the ranger. He pulls out a map and points us toward a two-mile path that takes us from the barrens to an abandoned beaver lodge in the swampland below. We have our binoculars. We have our snacks and water. We have our state symbol checklist. We are off. Pine tree, check, as you might imagine. Plenty of pines grow in pine barrens. They thrive on the lightning fires that used to tear through the forest periodically. The fire wipes out hardwoods and ground vegetation, leaving behind buried seeds and fire-resistant plants like pine trees. Lots of creatures depend on those fires, too, and the wildlife, from weasels to fox squirrels to fence lizards, live in abundance here. We see a fence lizard. not the state reptile, but a marvel all the same, peering down at us from a trunk of a pine tree. Mottled with the same grays and browns as the bark, we would never have seen him if he hadn't lifted his head. We see another non-state reptile, a cottonmouth, the same color as the gray sticks of the beaver lodge we climb on into the swamp. "Mama, it's a snake," Thomp says as it slithers beneath his feet, deeper into the lodge. "Why won't it wait for you to come see it?" "It doesn't know how much we love it," I tell him. Nature's that way. Not only is it unaware of how much we love it, but it doesn't care if we love it at all. We have no words to tell it. It doesn't perform on command. It comes for those of us who wait, those of us who are lucky, and those of us who know how to look. Sometimes it doesn't come at all. Does it matter, then, if it comes? Does it matter that we love it? Does it make a difference? We find more than 10 species of native bees buzzing between wildflowers by the dam, beaver dam. Not the state insect, the honeybee, but insects all the same at work in the world that their ancestors helped build. We find other non-state insects as well, a Hercules beetle grub, as big as my palm and as tender as a newborn beneath a log, 20 species of ants carrying innumerable prey items, hoverflies and dung beetles, water striders and damselflies. We are slow and quiet. Most of the creatures that notice humans seem startled by us. Plenty of life doesn't notice humans at all. We are pelted by tiny flies, hopeful for mates as we accidentally walk through a cloud of them. We watch a wolf spider stalk small life forms, unconcerned by the giants pushing aside leaves ahead of it to form a spider path. We don't find a marbled salamander or a pine barren tree frog, but we have great fun watching other toads and frogs burst from the leaves along the trail and glare at us between their warts with wise old eyes. We don't see a possum or even a single gray squirrel. We do find a fox squirrel moving like a cat through the needles. We see a tiny rodent pop up from the ground, think better of it, and pop back down. Like squirrels, cardinals and dogwood trees seem to be given in any outdoor setting in North Carolina. We only see one dogwood planted near the visitor center, which we don't count, and zero cardinals. But we do see turkey oaks, pitcher plants, red-headed woodpeckers, nuthatches, and hear a chorus of warblers and sparrows. In the morning, we had set out hoping to find everything on our list. By afternoon, we're willing the symbols to stay hidden. We lie in the sand and the needles in the middle of a trail and watch the sun come through the green. We listen to the quiet, a noisy quiet, one built from still breeze and distant birds and insect murmurs. Thump makes a path through the sand for a wayward beetle. He shepherds ants to a fallen hornet laid open on the ground. "We could make this our little house," he says. "I don't see why not," I say. "These could be our pets. We have too many pets." Still, he rolls away in the softness. He looks the wrong way through his binoculars, makes the world seem small enough to sit on his thumbnail. Just as with nature, Thomp has no idea how much I love him. Just as with nature, I have no way to explain it. If that's true, does it make a difference how much we love someone else? Does it matter? So, it didn't work out for us to, as far back as finding the state symbols, as in Weymouth Woods. Back home in Raleigh, we do avoid a dead possum, and as we turn into our driveway, we find a cardinal sitting on our dogwood tree, a gray squirrel scurrying beneath it, a honeybee in our lavender in the front yard, a pine tree across the road. Not one thing we planned worked out. We didn't see anything we came for. But sometimes not working out is better. Sometimes not seeing can mean more than seeing. Sometimes our symbols have other plans. Does it make a difference? Does it matter? Of course it does. Though maybe not in the way that we expect. If you'd like to go to Weymouth Woods, which I did many, many years ago, Sand Hills Nature Preserve is at 1024 Fort Bragg Road in Southern Pines. You'll find more about them at ncparks.org. www.thebiblecenter.org. And now we seem to have stopped the beginning of the magazine. It's a place where there's some nice short articles, which is good because we just have a few minutes left. And a local's guide to Fayetteville. You can shop at Back Around Records. It could be anywhere from 80,000 to 100,000 vinyl albums at Back Around Records, covering just about every genre. Sean Adkins started the shop, tucked on the second floor of a building in Market Square, in 2018 with 10,000 items from his personal collection, including records, CDs, cassette tapes, and turntables. A Bit of Carolina, Robin Matthews' store features 60 consigners, 57 of whom are from the Fayetteville area, including makers of specialty foods, jewelry, clothing, and wreaths. She curates custom gift baskets from around different themes, like a hot basket with habanero cheese balls, and ships them all over the country. Stevie's on Hay. Steve Aubrey spent years traveling around as the world as a military attaché, designing themed displays. At her store in Fayetteville, she uses those skills to create elaborate seasonal window displays. You should see how many people take selfies in front of her window display, Troy says. Inside, she sells items that remind her of her family's travels, including chocolates from the UK, surfer's salve from Hawaii, and bohemian clothing and jewelry. You can stay at McPherson House Bed and Breakfast. When Katie and Michael Stevick renovated the 1920 McPherson House into a six-room bed and breakfast in 2020, they preserved as many historic details as they could, from the original hardwood siding to the 1926 clawfoot tub in the Kempleton Room. Each room's name has a local connection. The Saint Avoid is named for Fayetteville's sister city in France. Each morning, the Stevicks serve breakfast tailored to their guests. Offering might include a savory quiche or creme brulee French toast. And finally, Turner Lane, named for owners Elaine and Jack Kelly's son, Turner. This shop highlights local makers and delights the senses. Artisan soaps in 50 different scents, hands-on terrarium-making workshops, jams and jellies, their own brand of olive oils and vinegars, and muscadine slushies that customers can sample while they browse home decor and specialty gift items. Oh, I guess we have time for one more. Cameo Art Theater. Since it opened in 1914, the space that currently houses the Cameo has been home to several businesses. But back then, as it is now, it was a theater. Architects Chris Cusnell and Eric Lindstrom and Chris's wife Nasum tried to preserve the history when they purchased the building in 1998 and opened it as the Cameo in 2000, primarily showing newly released independent films. Well, my friends, that is about all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it, and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.